Hi, everybody, and welcome to Two Out the First. It is March 31st, 2023. I'm Ryan Bellinger. Good to have you here with us. We've got a couple of different stories to talk about today. We've got TaylorMade's golfer survey results, and they don't quite mean exactly what TaylorMade thinks they mean, but we'll talk about that a little bit. We're going to talk about some comments from Cam Smith responding to folks that say the folks on LIV don't play real golf anymore, and then we'll throw in something as a kind of a mini thing on the back end about the U.S. Women's Open that is important to note, but in the end may not be that huge of a deal. All right, let's start with the golfer survey that TaylorMade sent out. And I believe that I tweeted about this, and I tweeted out the survey, linked to a couple of folks who were interested in taking part of it. Those were mostly pro-rollback people, and I took the survey, admittedly. I wanted to see what they were asking and obviously gave my opinion as a golfer to the questions that they asked. And this was a Qualtrics survey that they issued, and they said about 45,000 folks responded to it. Now, you have to imagine, obviously, this is not a scientific survey, for one. This wasn't conducted by a scientific agency who does this kind of polling with properly worded questions, and we'll talk a little bit about that, too. Also, this was sent out by TaylorMade, the brand. You would assume that people who are responding to this, generally speaking, are favorable to the TaylorMade brand and their viewpoint, which they put at the set of an email newsletter that included the survey link. Now, they did this on social media too. I'm sure they put it out on other channels. But for a lot of people seeing this, they also saw TaylorMade's opinion before they ever read the survey, and they're more likely to believe what TaylorMade's viewpoint is, probably because they are equipment enthusiasts, and they may be more likely to purchase equipment than the average person. So you have to kind of put all of that in context of who these 45,000 golfers are. You don't have to verify any information about yourself. You could answer this ironically. I don't think a lot of that happened, but there are a lot of things, kind of caveats you have to put out front when you're talking about something like this, because this isn't a scientifically conducted survey. But the results, nevertheless, are interesting and worth looking at. So TaylorMade, obviously having the view that they think a rollback and bifurcation of the equipment rules of golf is bad, they want to tout that a lot of folks who responded to the survey do not believe a rollback is necessary. And by a 3-to-1 margin, maybe a 4-to-1 margin, depending on the question that is asked and how it's asked, and we'll talk about that. But that's the big part for them. And then I want to go through the parts I think are actually interesting and kind of favor the rollback argument in a way that maybe they didn't expect, and I want to talk about that too. So let's start with the questions. I just want to go over the results of the questions. I don't want to spin them. I want to give you the results of the questions, and then we'll spin them. So there were 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 questions on the survey, and then there was something on the back end. So a sixth question, I believe, was, what are the 3 words you most associate with the proposal? And among the most common were dumb, stupid, silly, those types of things. And that makes sense in what you're about to hear from the yes, no questions, or against 4 questions. So here's the wording of the questions as given in the survey, and then the response percentages. First question, to the best of your knowledge, do you agree with the proposed golf ball rule? 81% said no, 19% said yes. Okay, we're presuming these 45,000 people actually read what the USGA have proposed. I'm guessing they didn't, or they really don't understand it. So you kind of have to take that with a grain of salt. And you almost have to provide people with the information and then tell them what they, to respond to that, as opposed to kind of offering a vague question. You're presuming someone knows the full extent of it, whether you have a formed view on it or not. But that's worth noting. Second question, do you think average hitting distances in professional golf need to be reduced? 77% said no, 23% said yes. So you get a little bit more on the question of, you think distance needs to go down, but you don't agree with the rule. So there's a little disparity there. You would think there'd be even tighter. I mean, it's a 4 percentage point difference, but I do find that kind of interesting. I mean, there's some percentage of golf fans who think the ball goes too far and guys hit it too far, but they're not willing to roll it back, is how I'm interpreting that. Question 3, are you for or against bifurcation in the game of golf, parenthetical, i.e. different rules for professional golfers versus amateurs? 81% against, 19% for. Exactly the same breakdown as the first question. What I think part of the issue here is the wording of the question, and we'll come back to it in a minute. Fourth question. How important is it for you to play with the same equipment professional golfers use? 48% said extremely important. 35% said moderately important. 6% said not important, which is the correct answer. The last question. If the proposed golf ball rule were to go into effect, would it have an impact on your interest in professional golf? 45% said less interested. 49% no impact. And 6%, and I raised my hand, I was one of those 6%, said more interested. So that kind of all comes down to the answer, the spread of those questions. And then TaylorMade throws in their press release here that 57% of golfers who responded and said they were age 18 through 34 said they would be interested in professional golf, while 5% said they would be more interested. So of 57-43 split among younger people, who, frankly, younger people have grown up with this equipment, right? I grew up in an era just before the dawn of the Pro V1. So I knew golf was fun long before you could swing as hard as you want at a golf ball with a driver and there basically be impunity about it. I think that is kind of interesting to note. If you did the plot of age groups, you would probably see a difference there because those younger people and also older people would probably favor or be against a rollback in the sense that they also use technology to keep hitting the ball as far as they did 30 or 40 years ago in some cases. So for them to lose that distance if equipment were rolled back for them, it's not the proposal, but if it were rolled back for them, maybe they wouldn't like that. So I do think that's kind of interesting. But some takeaways to kind of spin things back the other way instead of TaylorMade saying, well, 45,000 golfers have responded and 77-80% of them are against the model local rule. I think you do get some really interesting feedback, though, on this last question, which 54% of respondents said that it will have no impact or a positive impact on their view of professional golf if the model local rule, 55%, comes to pass, and that they do change the equipment standard for the golf ball for highly competitive amateurs, the highest level of competition among professionals. That intrigues me because that means people, a little bit more than half of people don't really care. They're still going to regardless of a potential equipment rule change. I do find that very interesting, and it's something that was not very well highlighted in the social media posts from TaylorMade because obviously that kind of flies in the face of the point they're trying to make here, which is, well, people will be less interested in pro golf. And you don't want people to be less interested in pro golf, right? Well, if it's about the same or slightly better, okay, that's cool. How much less interested? I think if you were to do maybe a scientific survey here, you might ask people on their interest level of, zero plus minus some levers, basically, not more interested, less interested, same. You would say zero, minus one, minus two, minus three, zero, plus one, plus two, plus three, because then you have a rating scale. Now all of a sudden you go, okay, well, if it's a lot of minus threes, that's really bad. If it's a bunch of minus ones, okay, over it. I think that's something worth noting here. The other thing I thought was really interesting is question three. Are you for or against bifurcation in the game of golf, i.e. different rules for professional golfers versus amateurs? 81% say against, 19% say for. If you want to spin that one way, you go, okay, well, we're against the model local rule as proposed. Well, how would you feel if the model local rule applied to everybody? Would that work? Would you be in favor of that? Because one of the most intriguing set of responses that I've gotten in the course of the response to this proposal since it came out is a fair number, not a huge number, but a fair number of people have said to me, I would much rather they just roll it back for everybody because I like playing the same, or at least believing in the perception that I play the same equipment as the best golfers in the world. I want to play what they play. So if that's the case, if you re-asked, if you did the survey over again, or you went to that 81% and said, well, okay, you are against bifurcation. Are you, and we'll talk about the wording of that in a second, but you're against bifurcation. Would you be for if the rules applied the same to everyone? because we actually already have bifurcation in the rules of golf, depending on how you interpret the groove rule. Now, everyone got around the groove rule, but we had bifurcation in the game of golf when that was applied, because professionals and high competitive amateurs had to use conforming grooves basically right away, and then they phased it in for everybody else over time. So we already had this, a surprise. But the wording of this question is kind of tricky, and the reason it's tricky is because it says, are you against bifurcation in the game of golf? Not bifurcation in a specific rule, are you against bifurcation in general? Well, these folks don't know, apparently, that there's bifurcation already in the rules of golf. And I've been talking about this for 15, 16 years. There's already bifurcation. There's been that. It's been out there. So that's nothing new. You're answering a question that doesn't need to be asked because it's already happened. And there is some bifurcation in the rules of golf already in terms of how you can approach laser range finders, although that's kind of changed a little bit with local rules. A bunch of different things are a little bit different at the professional level or local rule level for high-level competition. So that's something worth noting. But I do think there's some, obviously, validity here in knowing that people who like equipment are not going to like a proposed rollback for professional golfers. I do find it particularly troubling, though, that 48% of respondents said it is important for them to play the same equipment professional golfers do, because you don't. You just don't. And you may play some of the same and a lot of the same, but you don't play exactly the same. And I think that's really important to underscore here. But it is interesting that 52% said it doesn't matter. It's kind of important, or it doesn't matter at all to them that they play the same equipment professionals do. And I think if you ask that question a little bit differently, you might get a different set of responses. But you can interpret it two ways, right? You can interpret it as, I want to play the same stuff as the pros play. Or you can interpret it as, I want to play the same high quality of stuff. I want to play good stuff. I don't want to play bad stuff. And that might be the perception between professional golf equipment and off-the-shelf stuff. Because we've been told for years, and accurately so, get fit for your equipment, don't buy stuff off the rack, don't buy bad equipment just because it's cheaper, make the investment in your game as best you can. And that would make sense if that's what you're equating with professional golfers' equipment. So, very interesting results here. Not going to try to drown on too much about it. But I think there are some things you can kind of take away from it that might be positive to a rollback argument, be positive to a blanket rollback argument. But you got to remember the audience of responding to this. And if you wanted to do a survey, you'd probably have it done scientifically with better worded questions and different ways of responding than we've got here. But it's something to build off of, and obviously influenced by TaylorMade's position that they're not fans of this. So take that for what it is, but wanted to go into it a little bit. Second story today is a bit of a response from Cam Smith regarding some pushback and some criticism of players who have gone to LIV. Now, obviously no one likes to be criticized. No one likes to hear what they're doing is bad. I mean, I'll give you a personal example. I tweeted yesterday about playing golf using new carts at our club, and we kind of ran into a funny moment. They're like, that day, they started using these new carts. They got a GPS system with geofencing. Cart path and a hole, but where the path ran into some shade, and it might be difficult for the GPS to pick it up, and it flashed, hey, you're in a restricted area. You have to back out off the cart path into grass so it would pick it up, and then you could drive. We thought it was hilarious, so I tweeted about it. And this guy tweeted, Tyler Munson 7 found it, and he doesn't follow me, and quote tweeted and said, maybe use your legs. Well, people say mean stuff like that, not understanding context and not understanding what I was actually saying. Guy doesn't follow me. And I have found that typically the dumbest, most inane, most ignorant responses come from the people who don't follow me, don't understand anything I'm trying to say. So those are the people you want to avoid in life, who just spout their mouth and actually don't know anything about which they're talking about. He said, maybe use your legs. Well, I walk 95% of the time. And if you follow me, you know I like to walk. You know I don't ride that much. But this guy doesn't, and he said something stupid, and hey, that happens. So you don't like that. That's not fun for anybody, and I'm sure it's not fun for the guys on LIV who are taking a ton of criticism for all kinds of different facets of being part of LIV. Now, obviously, the response is, that's what the money's for. But now we've got a major coming up next week. This is our first opportunity this year to see LIV golfers all of them, you know, all 17, 18 that are eligible for the Masters, many of them former champions, compete against the PGA Tour guys, compete against DP World Tour guys, the top 50 in the world ranking, that they're the replacements for these guys because they've been pulled out because of how the world ranking has responded to LIV. And so I think these guys are riled up on LIV. I think they see this as a huge opportunity to prove to the world that they are still competitive, that they didn't take a step down in weight class, so to speak, to be able to play on LIV Golf for the money, but that they are still driven to compete at the highest level each and every time out. So here comes Smith this week, yesterday following the Pro-Am. I don't know if they have one or two Pro-Ams for LIV events, but they are at the Orange County National Golf Club this week playing the Crooked Cat. They had a Pro-Am yesterday. And Smith was kind of talking about how he perceives this upcoming week. Says, quote, "First and foremost for me, I'm trying to go there and play the best golf I can. Is it important for LIV? I think it is important for us to go there and really show a high standard of golf, which we know we're all capable of." And then continues, "Many of us will get four cracks at it this year in the majors, and hopefully we can get a win out of it. Maybe we just show a really hearty effort. I think for us internally, it's the right thing. There's a lot of chatter going around about these guys don't play real golf anymore, and I think it's BS, to be honest, and we just want to show people that." And I think that's a fair response to a criticism level of these guys, because, oh, you're playing one less, oh, you're playing a shotgun start, oh, you're playing a team thing that a lot of people don't seem to understand. Is this not really golf? Is this exhibition golf? I think that's the term that's been laid at the feet a lot of LIV golfers. And I think they want to push back, hey, we are playing real golf here. We are playing high-level competitive golf, and we are not just out here for, you know, giggles. And I think the majors turn into that opportunity, at least for this year. And the reason I say at least for this year is if LIV golfers do well in these tournaments, then there's reason to suggest they're still competitive, of course. But if they all fall flat on their face, or most of them, then that doesn't look as good. And I think that really hurts the reputation of LIV, because you go, okay, well, you've built it up as you're this great tour and highly competitive and just as good as the PGA Tour or better than that, and you can't compete with them. These four opportunities that you get per year. So I think there is a ton of pressure on the LIV guys to be able to perform well, not just show up, shake hands, kiss babies, and be ceremonial. And for a lot of the guys that are former champions, frankly, that's kind of how they're perceived, because they haven't been particularly competitive before they went to LIV. Now they're on LIV. Charles Schwartzel won an event. Sergio, just his team came in, I think they won the last event in two. You've got Louis Oosthuizen, who's played well. Obviously didn't win, but got to a playoff or a Masters. Bubba Watson won twice. You've got Dustin Johnson's a former champion. So you've got a number of former Masters winners competing, or guys that have really close calls, and they are generally at the older stages of their career. So not only are they fighting the perception that they went to LIV and they aren't playing as well, or they aren't playing important golf and therefore won't respond well to the majors, but also to the perception that they're just flat getting older and they can't compete with these young guns anymore, because frankly, the young guns are on the PGA Tour. So there's going to be some real ratcheted up intrigue. And I think Cam Smith highlighted it very well here, that internally, a lot of the players have to figure this is our chance to show and represent for LIV that what we are doing here on our 14 event schedule is just as relevant, just as pertinent, just as competitive as what you see on the PGA Tour or DP World Tour week to week. I don't know how people respond to that. I don't know how the players themselves respond to that. Effectively, more than a third of the players who compete on LIV will be in the Masters. So that's a fair representation of that league. Now, those guys are going to have a harder time probably getting to the PGA Championship in some cases, and that'll depend on what the PGA of America chooses to do with its invitation criteria, which they usually try to get the top 100 in the world to come. Will they invite LIV guys? We don't know that yet. We'll obviously have a little bit of a different view for the U.S. Open, because we have a couple former champions, but some of those guys are going to have to do qualifying, so they might not have as many LIV guys in the U.S. Open. Same thing for the Open Championship. you're not going to have as many Liv guys here. So this is like the one big chance Liv has to, one, win a major this year, and two, get a sizable representation in any of the majors. That's a big deal. And I think that's a story that cannot be underscored enough. But that said, it doesn't seem like Augusta National is particularly interested in having Liv guys talking ahead of the tournament. And that's because Cam Smith is the only single pre-tournament interview of a Liv guy, and that's because he is a reigning major champion. Dustin Johnson is a champion, what, 3 years ago? Well, a little less than 3 years ago. It was November 2020. But he would have been a guy that I've been interested to hear from. And Phil Mickelson has typically spoken ahead of Masters tournaments because he's a three-time champion. So it is interesting that Cam Smith's kind of on the island, and I would imagine he's going to be asked some questions about this very topic and this response here. See how that works out. But it is a very interesting storyline to me heading into the Masters next week, how basically a third of Liv is representing the rest and how it could go very poorly or very well or just kind of blah. There are probably three outcomes there. So we'll see what happens in the perception of Liv and whether it helps or hurts after the Masters. Last thing I want to talk about, this isn't one or two story. This is just kind of an aside, just kind of came up as we were getting ready to record. Last year, the USGA signed a 10-year sponsorship with a company called ProMedica, a medical benefits company. And they're a not-for-profit based out of Ohio. And they signed on to be the first presenting sponsor of the U.S. Women's Open. And with their support, they were going to boost and did boost the purse last year of the U.S. Women's Open to $10 million, part of this big arms race in the LPGA majors to bump up the purses. And they went basically doubled almost across the board, felt like overnight, but over a couple of years. Well, that 10-year agreement is now done. Bethann Nichols from Golf Week covers women's golf. She's the best. She just is. And she spoke with CEO Mike Wan of the USGA. He confirmed that the two companies reached a separation agreement about a month ago, and that is because ProMedica's business took a significant downturn and they weren't able to spend that kind of money on a sponsorship. Wan said, quote, "It doesn't change anything about our commitment to where we play, how we play, how much we play for. All those things remain the same." And then ProMedica sent a statement that said, "We are grateful for those partners like the USGA that understand the extreme financial challenges the healthcare industry has been navigating and have worked with us in a professional manner to reassess prior engagements." So it doesn't seem like there's going to be any kind of rush here to change what we see in terms of the purse. That's still going to be $10 million. And it sounds like they're going to try to find another presenting sponsor, but that there's not a huge rush. Wan said, "I think anybody who had doubts about whether or not a presenting sponsor would be good for the women's game and help lift the U.S. Women's Open to another level, those doubts were eliminated," end quote. And the venues are fantastic for a bunch of the next several U.S. Women's Opens. They're going to Pebble this year, which is incredible. It's going to be great. So, I mean, for ProMedica's business, no one likes to see someone just go out of business because of hard times, but they will find another presenting sponsor, I am sure, in due course. Mike Wan is a magician at this kind of stuff, but it is an interesting side note to that story. All right, that's going to do it for us today on Two Off the First. Let's do it for us this week on Two Off the First. We will come back at you on Monday. We will start Masters Week. Just so very exciting. We'll have plenty to talk about. If you listen to the show as a podcast, please consider subscribing, leaving us a review, leaving a comment. It helps us reach more people. If you're watching on YouTube, smash that like button. Please subscribe to the channel. Again, helps us reach more people. If you're watching somewhere else, hey, thanks for spending some time with us today. We'll be back on Monday. Have a great weekend, everybody. We'll talk to you on Monday on Two Off the First.